Okay. Can I have one?
All right, so let's go ahead and call it meeting to order. Patricia, if you could take roll call.
Caudillo?
Here.
Hooker?
Here.
Juarez?
Here.
Langell? Strong? Zaker?
Here.
And Commissioner Alatorre is running late.
Okay, thank you. No public comments?
All right, so this evening we are fortunate to have Chief Gearing here from the fire department, and he's been working with staff on a short presentation to explain the threshold standard calculations, and Scott Barker is here at the PowerPoint, and Scott, if you want to take it from here.
Sure.
Great, thanks.
I have a PowerPoint
produced.
Is
that being worked on? So, real quick before you start. So, Chief, I just wanted to thank you for coming and to help clarify the numbers here. So, so you could hear from us, what our concern was in the table of the 2018 fire and EMS response. You list the 9 fire stations, then you have in table 3 the percentage of calls within 7 minutes. And what we've been doing is taking those percentages, divided by 9 fire stations, and we come up to a number of 76.46. So that's a little different than the 81.4. So we just want to understand the math behind it and how you came up to the number you got.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Commissioner. And I'm happy to be here tonight. And we have been working together to provide some slides that will illustrate how we calculate our response times. And I think we have some ownership in this because we talked about this as well. During some of the conversations, presentations, we use some of the lingo, we interchange it a lot. And we say things like average, on average. And I don't think that's helped to explain where we're coming from. And there's a difference between taking 10 numbers, adding them all together, and then dividing them by 10. That would be an average, and that's not the way that we're doing our calculation. I think what we have to show you tonight will make you feel more comfortable with the way that we've been doing it. And so I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and the goal for me, not only leave here knowing that the commission feels good about what we're doing, what we've been presenting, and what we would present, in the future, but that if there is some mistrust in our department and what we've been portraying, what we've been presenting, then that's a reflection on me. I represent the department. I want to clear anything that might be leading to mistrust. I'd like to clear that up. If there's any other concerns or questions, please.
And I wouldn't say it was mistrust. It was more understanding the numbers, because when we looked at it, we couldn't come up with your number. So that was more understanding the math behind it.
Yeah, and just one other thing, too, and I appreciate you coming, too, Chief. I think you guys are doing a great job, too. So just for clarification, just like as Commissioner Hooker explained. But I think another one of the confusion, I think, was because everybody wants to get it right, was the word percentile was being kicked around instead of percent, which is a different terminology. So we didn't know if you guys were just using the wrong word or you guys were using the right word but meaning something different. So I don't know if you remember that,
yes,
but we kind of, yeah, so that was another thing, too. We wanted to just make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah, very good.
That's all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
want me to proceed? If that's all right with the Commissioner?
Go ahead.
All right. Okay, so, thanks for letting us come back. And, we were here and we heard, your questions and stuff. So we did take note of that. And as I recall from when we met on the 7th, following the November 15th meeting with the fire department, and as you summarized just now, the questions have to do with, how is the threshold standard calculated? Is it based on an average percentile, a ranked order, or is it another process used? Also, you know, I think I also heard when we were talking, you know, does the fire department throw out outliers, like, you know, very high values, very low values? You know, just to address that, you know, we've talked about it, that's not the case. So the analysis in the questionnaire that I'm going to present to you contains all the data, so there's no removable outliers for statistical analysis.
May I make just
sure.
One comment? That's true. We don't throw out numbers, and when we know that there are numbers that are not valid, and there are very few, we remove them. But as a general rule, we don't go through and say, okay, these don't seem to fit, so we're going to take them out. It's more convenient to do that. We do not do that.
Absolutely. And the third question, which I think you raised, Dwayne, which is how can we conclude that fire and EMS complied with the professional standard, given that the average percentage of response times by station is below 78%? I think we deal with about 75%. So we have a few few figures and tables that will follow that I hope will kind of illustrate what we're talking about. Now, here's a summary of the threshold, and it really is a percentage. So, properly equipped and staffed fire and medical units shall respond to calls throughout the city within 7 minutes in at least 80% of the cases. So it's a percentage. And as you can see here, here's a calculation. Yeah. Stephanie provided this data.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Can we get him a handout?
Yeah.
You want one too, man?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Laura, did you want one?
No, that's fine.
Good?
Yeah.
Might as well. We have one.
I'm pretty generous.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a different kind of crane now.
So,
really, what's key here is 80% of the calls.
And you, Stephanie, provided us with the actual number of calls for each year. And so you divide that number by that number, you get this. So 81.4, 80.6 under the previous years were below the threshold standard. So it's a percentage.
So say that one more time. You
say
divide which two numbers?
So if you take the 11,388,
okay,
and then divide it by the 13,986, then you'll get that 80.4%.
So 11,383 calls out of the 14,000 were responded to within 7 minutes.
And so this is essentially the table one from the questionnaire, and we just added a column that lays out exactly what the total number of calls that met the threshold was. Because right now it just says the total number of calls and then the percent that meet it, mm-hmm. And we thought it just would be helpful so you can see the actual count and see the math. So this is really, this is the standard, this is the threshold.
Right.
Okay.
And then we've been talking about percentiles, and it did come up before. And I think, and part of the reason why, part of the reason why it came up is that, is it correct to say, I think the way that the fire department organizes and reviews data is based on a ranked order. And just as an FYI, when we talk about a percentile, that's what it is. And in this example, you know, you've got this person's in the 80th percentile, meaning that every 80% of the population is shorter than them. But for the threshold standard, it's actually the person in the orange person, and that's 80% of the cases, or in our case, the calls. And this would be 7 minutes or less, and every call beyond that would be below that value of 7 minutes.
And there are 20 people there. The 16th person is the 80th percent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And a couple of examples of how that might work in a hypothetical situation. Here's a station, Again, it's just a made-up situation that had just a total of 10 calls per year. And, you know, based on how the data is collected and reviewed, you know, we ask the question, is it compliant? And in this case, it is. There's 10 calls, eight of the calls are 7 minutes or less. So that's 80%. So that's consistent with the threshold standard. If it just, you know, just consisted of a single station that had only 10 calls per year. Just made up. And just FYI, just based on, you know, look, we've got some really high numbers here. If we take an average 10 cases, 84 total minutes of response time, you take an average, it's 8.4 minutes on average, but that's not the threshold. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a similar example where, you know, again, I just threw in some numbers to kind of prove the point, where the liquid, it's only 50% of the calls are 7 minutes or less, not compliant, and yet, when you look, you take the average of the minutes per call, 6.9 minutes, it's less than seven, but it's not threshold standard, it's compliant.
And that's essentially how our data analyst works the numbers. She'll start with this is the example of 10 calls, as if we were to run 10 calls, but she'll start with the 16,000 calls or so that we report, and she'll start with, the first call will be the fastest call, with the lowest number in minutes, and the second call will be the next lowest number, and so forth, all the way up until we get to whatever number makes 80%. And that tells us where we are.
And that's how you come up with the 11,383?
No. No, that's an
actual count.
The actual?
That's the actual count.
So the 11,383 isn't at the 80 percentile?
11,383 is the count of calls that they responded to within 7 minutes.
Okay.
So that is 81.4% of the total
right,
calls.
Okay. All right, that's what I wanted.
But if you were to take that last call that fell in within the 7 minutes, that it would come into the 81.4 percentile.
Okay. Okay.
So it's just ranking them.
Right. Okay. All right, that makes sense. Okay. So one question is, why did you go to 81.4 and then that cut off at 8?
So what they're supposed to report to you is the percent of calls that they respond to within 7 minutes.
So you just cut off at the 7 minutes?
7 minutes is the target. So that's what you're looking for, not the 80%. So how many calls are within the 7 minutes, and then is that as a percent of your total calls 80% better, worse? Where do you fall in that comparison?
Okay. So as long as it's above 80, you're good to go.
Right. So in this case, it just marked up, 7 minutes marked up to 81.4.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now it's a little clearer.
A little bit?
Yeah, just a little bit. Okay. Now I understand the math. Okay, put that way. When we were doing it before, I was like, how are they coming up with this number?
Yeah.
But that explains it. Okay, that.
I struggled over this for years, and every year was the same question. Like, wait a minute, explain this to me again.
Yeah, because
the next slide, I think, will make a lot more sense.
And this goes to the issue that you raised, which is, you know, what, you know, we take the average, the nine stations, we take the, you know, the average, you know, percent of calls responded to within 7 minutes or less, and you divide by nine, you know, it ends up being a lower number. But we took that, this is based on table four from the questionnaire, and we took it and we did a weighted average. And the reason for the weighting is if you look at some of the green highlighted stations are ones that were, you know, in some cases fairly substantially, you know, the percentage of calls responded to within 7 minutes, it's like 91%. And this is 4,000 calls, 4,400. This is 85.5%, another 3,200. And then another 1,000 calls at 82.6. So if you look at this overall, the total number of calls of nearly 14,000, you know, you take these together, it's a fairly good share of this tool.
Right.
And then the ones that are low, you know, this one's very low, this one's very low, but look, the number of calls are quite small. And it's not a large percentage of the total. So you can't you just can't take a straight average. I mean, you can, but it doesn't tell you.
It's not the threshold.
That's what we missed.
Yes.
Yeah.
That right there is what we missed.
Yeah. It's not that it's not a valid conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not the threshold.
So yeah, it does tell you the information. So it's a straight average, and it's the average per station, and it doesn't consider that there's a bunch of them at 90.
Yeah, it's treating, when you do a straight average, it's treating each fire station as an equal,
right.
And they're not equal.
Right.
You can see that fire station 1, fire station 5 have the majority of the calls, so they should be weighted in terms of how many calls they're receiving. So you don't want a straight average, you're looking at the weighted average.
For the threshold
standard.
Right.
So the way to get to the threshold standard is you have to apply a weight. So you've got column A, which is the number of calls, and column B is the percentage of calls responded to within 7 minutes. So if you take column A times column B, you get these numbers. And then if you tally these numbers together, you get this total of 100 and almost, or
11,400
roughly. And then if you take this number divided by this, it's the weighted average, and it ends up being 81.4%. So it matches up what's in the table. So
okay,
that helps.
Now it makes sense. What at least I was missing that was that 80th percentile, for lack of a better word, but it's the 7 minute threshold, not the percentage.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now it makes sense.
I think that's what I was missing.
Yeah.
I don't. This is really helpful, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Now that we see this, we said, "Duh, this is simple." But I just want to make a comment, if I may. I mean, as I sit here, as you know, as a citizen, and you know, we can look at these numbers and simply ask ourselves this one question: now that we understand. Does the department meet threshold standards, right? That's just one simple question. The answer is absolutely. But I tend to go a little deeper than that. I mean, numbers are important, but I feel that our role here is to really use the data as a way of giving us perhaps a look inside the department, not certainly as deep as Chief you would do, since that you run the department, for us to sit here and kind of be able, if you think of us as your leverage, as your ally, right? You know, we use the data as a way of kind of making an intelligent, informed assessment of how we feel the department is performing and, or not for that matter, and how we can best support you, kind of be your voice, be your advocate at that time, which we did, you know, last year when it came to the measure A and, what was the other one?
B.
So again, and I'm saying this just so you understand why we're not questioning. It's not a matter of can we trust the numbers or not. You know, if you don't understand something, you have to ask, and you provided a great explanation. But is for us to really get a better sense of how is our fire department performing? You know, what is it that we can do in the report in terms of our recommendation to our elected body? So if you think of it, if you accept that as a context, you know, I don't just rely on, okay, did they meet the threshold standard? You know, I do look at each station. So perhaps that's not our role, but if it isn't, you know, I'd like to be told that, so I don't waste staff time. But I think as commissioners, you know, we have a fiduciary responsibility to really be able to not make recommendations, but also provide information to the general public. For folks that know that we come here and we're here to really help and support so that we can report out in a way that's consistent with how the department is performing. So again, that just you know, I just wanted to kind of put that out there, at least that's the way I'm looking at this. But this is very helpful, because I think there's a clear disconnect between average, as you said, we kind of sort of interchange it, versus percentile. And to me, it's pretty clear that they met the threshold standard.
Explained it very well. The only, to follow up on what Max was saying, the only other common concern I have is really fire stages 7 and 8. I mean, they're way behind the other. What's your take on those, and what can be done to help them? I mean, you know, we got the extra manning, we got that stuff. Do you foresee that helping, or is it the layout of the fire station? I mean, I know we did that one tour with that one. What can be done to help them?
Thank you. There are a number of things that we're working on, from using a different method to receive our calls. We have coming up here, we should be going to council, I'm hoping in April, with the new dispatch contract. Well, it's a new contract, but it's an extension. It's a continuation of what we're doing now. Within that contract, there is an upgrade to the station alerting. So all new communication devices for station alerting. So we should get alerted faster than we're used to. We'll also have cell phones issued to each employee. The CAD will talk directly to the phone and give directions to the call. That'll improve things. We're replacing, thanks to Measure P, we're replacing the apparatus doors, you would call the roll-up doors, they come up real slow. We are going to buy and install doors that open, believe it or not, in a minute, or excuse me, 1.5 seconds.
Wow.
I didn't believe it until I saw it, and they open in 1.5 seconds.
Do they roll up?
You hit your finger. There's a continuing effort on behalf of the battalion chiefs and Deputy Chief Munns to meet with the folks that are doing the work and go over their numbers on a monthly basis. We're sharing, we're communicating. We are replacing our apparatus, thanks to Measure P, where we had a deficiency in reserve apparatus, frontline apparatus, aging apparatus, apparatus that was spending most of its time in the shop. We're changing that. In fact, we'll have a ribbon cutting April 5th, I think it is, if that's the Friday. We'll have a ribbon cutting for our newest engine at Station 4. And we have two new engines coming after that very shortly. We have Measure A, that's funding oral staffing and the squad. So as I report to my boss, who's the city manager, I've been telling him, it's not going to be one thing, it's a series of things that is going to help us to achieve our response threshold.
Fire station, Chief.
And thank you, yes. New fire station, one in Millennia. In fact, we'll have a groundbreaking on March 29th. I hope you can make it. It's a great opportunity to invite you to the groundbreaking.
Will that be Station 10?
Station 10. On Millennia Way, March 29th at 2 o'clock. We'd love to see you there. We are relocating two of our fire stations, as you probably recall, Station 5 and Station 9. We're rebuilding them to have all the newest equipment and technology, and we're relocating them in areas that we have already done analysis that has told us that they're better suited. They'll be in locations better suited to respond and make our thresholds. So, again, I've been talking to my boss, and I've told him it's a series of things. It's a network of improvements that we're making, mm-hmm. that's going to help us to achieve our response thresholds. And not only the GMOC threshold of 7 minutes, 80%, but our three thresholds that have been adopted by council resolution in January of 2014. That is, first apparatus on scene for a medical emergency, 7 minutes, 90% of the time. A first engine at scene with four firefighters, 7 minutes, 90% of the time. And then the last one is 14 firefighters on scene of a structure fire, 10 minutes 90% of the time. And I have some results from these improvements that we've made. The squad and the 4-0 staffing. I actually have a USB in my pocket. You can stick it in a laptop and I can show you some slides right now. We can save it for next time, or I can just tell you what we've done.
Whatever you like, go ahead.
So, while you're learning that up, Chief, so just to clearly answer the chair's question, with the Millennia Fire Station, that should really help with the response times for Station 7 and 8.
Oh, cool.
Right, Chief, is that a fair statement that the Millennia Fire Station will help with the response times for 7 and 8? Because we've got Station 7 and 8. Millennia will take some of that pressure off.
Yes.
So that one in particular should make a real difference in the time for those locations.
I think you're going to be very pleased with what we've done. And Commissioner, you mentioned this commission being able to assist us along the way, and I think that it absolutely has, because it's kept us on the mark. It's kept us to come back every year and report to the commission. When it came time to explain the needs that we had to the community and to the council and to the Public Safety Advisory Committee and the COC, because we've been doing GMOC for so long, we already had numbers in place and we had our methodology in place, we had explanations in place, we were better suited and better capable to answer questions as they came along. So had we not been reporting to GMOC all those years, I think we would have had to start square one. So it really has helped us to report to you every year, and then your comments challenge us with answering questions and making improvements. It really did help us and set us up to be successful. So here's the presentation. We made this to the COC just the other night. In order to make the presentation, I thought it would be good to have, this is a 15-minute a show. It won't be any longer than 15 minutes, if that. We thought it was best to start the presentation sort of in a rewind to look at some of the deficiencies that we've had.
Click on enable content.
I know we're trying. It's not on his screen. I can't. Okay, just.
Well, what we'll see, we'll talk about some of the deficiencies that we presented for the last year and a half or 2 years, where we came from, what we had recommended, and what we're seeing now with these recommendations. And it's really good for me to see and for our staff to see that the things that we recommended, they work. The second day after we implemented our squad, and I'll talk about it in the slide here, I was at home, it was on Saturday. I had my what's called tablet command. I was watching the calls, watching the squad unit. I had my radio on, and I'll be darned if it was working. I could hear it, and I could see the unit arriving on scene before the engine got there. And I could hear on the radio the squad releasing the engine because they weren't necessarily needed at that call, freed up for availability. And I can remember texting Harry, our deputy chief, and saying, this is working. That's one day into it. And so we only have a month's data, but I think you're going to be really pleased to know that it is absolutely working. And those response times that we talked about a moment ago at Station 7 and Station 8, instead of being down here, they're actually increasing. They're not at 90% yet, but the improvement that we're seeing with just one squad, the first out of four, to me is incredible. And I'm even having some entertaining some thoughts about maybe we don't need four squads. We'll review this every year. What if it's only two squads that we need to get us at the 90% threshold? We could use those dollars to put them elsewhere to help in a different area, maybe with 4L staffing or another engine somewhere or what have you. But
I can draw some sketches on that board.
We can do a dramatization.
While we're waiting, just a couple of questions,
yes.
Chief. So stations 7 and 8, do you have any kind of thoughts on what you feel are causing these numbers to be where they're at? Is it because they're longer distances that they have to drive, or kind of anything you want to share with us?
Yes, thank you. There are a number of reasons, and we've talked about them throughout the years. I'll talk about them briefly, and then I'll tell you what I really think is the reason. The station layout, it's a big station, about 13,000 square feet. A lot of the dorms are in the back of the station.
You're talking 7 on that one, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Did I say?
We didn't say.
Okay, thank you. Yes, station 7.
Okay.
Specifically. And it takes a while to get to the, and we're talking about seconds here.
Yeah.
It takes longer to get to the apparatus and get out that door. The doors have been a problem. They go up really slow, and they're breaking all the time. Every year, these doors are breaking. And anyway, so another reason why we want to replace all the doors throughout the city at all 9 of our firehouses.
And we've taken those issues into consideration with the Millennium Fire Station design. We've got a different layout. Mm-hmm. We've got time studies of how long it's going to take to get from the dorm to the bay. All that's really informing your fire station design right now. We're learning from Fire Station 7
what
to do.
Yes, thank you. Painful discussions where we actually counted steps, and we laid out those steps on the plans, the floor plans for the Millennia Fire Station. And we said, no, if it takes as many steps in Millennia as it does at Station 7, it's the wrong design. We want less steps. But the thing that affects the east side, Station 7, Station 8, 6, 4, 3, is the distribution of resources. We have a tighter, I don't have the slide here, we may have shown it to you. If you recall, we show the map of the city, we show all the stations where they sit within the city, and then we show a circle around that station.
Right.
It's a three-quarter,
right.
Or yeah, three-quarter mile radius. And we show the overlaps. On the west, you have these tight rings. On the east, they're not even touching. And so if we can improve the distribution of resources with the squads, 4 of them, now you put the squads in and there are more rings and they're touching, they're overlapping. That is the one thing that has hurt us. We didn't do a good job with placing our stations in the east. We did a bad job. So now with increasing the distribution of resources, we have tightened that up. 4L staffing comes into play, too, and if we can get this thing up and running, I can show you a couple numbers as well, sir.
Okay. I have just actually on the flip side of that, I was just going to ask almost the same question that Commissioner Zaker did, but mine's a little bit more detailed. But so in relation to 7 and 8, my concern was actually a little bit further. So 7 and 8 has the least amount of volume and really the worst response times, but then station 1 and 5 have the highest volume and actually the best response time. So is it just the opposite true on those? So those stations are placed in the best spots then? So why is it just basically the opposite information on those two fire stations versus the two on the east?
I believe it is. We have a better distribution of resources on the west side.
Because it's interesting on how they're two opposites. I mean, you would think the station with the highest volume would probably be...
Yeah, understood.
I mean, how are they able to sustain a 90.7%
the
response time? That's
the best I can. The best I could explain that is the distribution of resources on the west is tighter, they're closer together. The layout of the stations These are old stations. This one here at City Hall is 1948. The one at Station 5 at 4th and Oxford was built in the 50s. Station 9 is a 1961 or 62. They're real small houses. There's nowhere to go. So I think we were on to something back then, right, when we built these stations. Everybody was, the living quarters, the dorms, the kitchens, the offices, they're right there on the trunk room. Now with newer technology, studies about cancer, pollutants in the air, diesel exhaust, things are removed. We have hallways now, and we have doors everywhere. And so we're putting our firefighters away from the truck rooms. We have exhaust systems, and that tends to slow us down. So there's some give and take there.
So what's the biggest thing? I mean, just this one graph right here kind of makes me want to ask a lot of questions. But so what's like the biggest takeaway from this, like for future fire stations, though? I mean, like the data that could be taken away from these four fire stations.
Yeah.
I mean, like Max said, you know, distance, you know, in the east, they're too far. These are, you know, I mean, if they were measuring, you know, like how far each of these calls were from the actual
build
fire station.
Electric fire engines, right? So we don't have to worry about the fuel. So.
Yeah.
No, I mean, really,
that's
coming to you. Because I think your points are absolutely 100% valid. And as I'm just listening to you, and it's all beginning to kind of make sense. So if, you know, in your line of work, seconds means, could potentially mean somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the environment that you have to operate in, counting steps from the dorm to the fire truck absolutely is critical, and that means that the design, the layout, the efficiency, the speed of the door, and all that stuff. So it's just fascinating to hear that you know how scientific all this stuff is. It's got to be all factored in.
Yes, yes.
To hit the numbers.
And so the stations will be a part of it, a contributing part to it. And as I said earlier, it's so many things.
But it seems like also, too, the placement of the initial station to begin with is so critical.
Yeah. Yes.
Not even just the layout of the station, but where it's going to be built to begin with based on projected development. And I don't know, like, how much our city's really considering all that. I mean, I'm sure they are, but that's not what we do. But
that's part of the master plan.
That would be part of the master plan, I guess. So,
well,
I mean,
you're right.
Yeah.
And it's quite frankly, it's too late. We're not built out, and the stations that we have, they're set.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
We can't go backwards.
Right.
We got a second swipe at the pinata, as they say, with station 5 and 9. We're fortunate. They need to be rebuilt, and because they need to be rebuilt, we consider if we could relocate them as well. And so we're going to do that with those two stations, but the other, I don't see an opportunity, at least not right now, to do that. So we're locked in.
You exercise eminent domain and start doing that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's the only other way to relocate.
That's right.
That's the only way to do it.
Time and money.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so thank you. I'll get started here. So we went a little bit in reverse, and we talked about some of our challenges, would you please?
Yes.
And we kind of focused on the growth of the city, population growth, and then the corresponding increase in calls. That kind of makes sense. PD has the same thing. And then this is an update of our calls for service. This shows the calls for 2018. Uh-huh. We didn't have the increase in calls from year to year, from 17 to 18, that we've normally had. So maybe go back, please. So maybe we've plateaued. We'll see next year, or I should say this year will tell us to give us a better story. But the point is that we, over the last 5 years, cumulatively, we've grown in call volume 28%. That's a ton. That's a lot. Next, please. And then this is our per capita. I know we've talked about this a lot in the last year and a half or 2 years. We're at a 0.44 per capita. That's 0.44 firefighters per 1,000. The national average is 0.88. That's the column on the far right. And that actually is the national average for the 10 westerly states. As we go east across the country, the per capita actually goes up. And then there's some comparisons with some other cities around us, fire departments around us. So 0.44. The main thing that I always want to make clear is that as the fire department, our goal is not to achieve 8.88, the national average, or even what National City does or anybody else. Our goal is the three thresholds, four actually, we want to include the GMOC threshold, and then the three thresholds that were set by the council in January of 14. And here they are. So arrival of the first unit on scene to a medical emergency within 7 minutes, 90% of the time, and then arrival of the first unit on scene to a structure fire within 7 minutes, with four firefighters known as the initial attack force. And if you can just go back one, sure. Scott, thank you. So what we have been doing is the GMOC number, that 81%. That's where we're at. But then when we break the city in half, west versus east, we're at 63% on the east. And we'd like to make a difference. We want to provide the same service on the east as we're providing on the west. So we broke it down, and we saw that we were deficient. We're 63% on the east. And then the last threshold is the arrival of the effective response force. That's 14 firefighters, 10 minutes, 90% of the time. And so if we had to grade ourselves, we would say improvement needed. And that was clear. We said that to the council and to the Oversight Committee and the Safety Advisory Committee. And three things, in addition to all the things that we talked about, the stations, the doors, the alerting, the one-on-one with the employees, the devices, all those things, this is what we really need is one, distribution of resources. That's those where we put our stations and how many stations we have and how many pieces of equipment. The other one is the concentration of resources. That threshold where we want to get 14 firefighters on scene in 10 minutes, that's it right there. That's the concentration of resources. We have to be able to assemble a number of firefighters at a bigger incident in a certain amount of time. And then the last one is the availability of the resources, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. So those are the three things we need. This was our expenditure plan that we took to the COC. I'm really happy if you click it, Scott, you can click it several times so we get all the circles there done. There's four more. But we took this to the COC and to the council. This was our expenditure plan. We got it done in record time. We were shooting for January 1 of this year. We got it. We almost made it. We got it done by the first week in February. And we did exactly what we said we would do. We made all these hirings. We implemented our furlough staffing. We implemented our squad. And then we're ready to go forward in FY20 with some additional improvements. That's another squad and 4-0 staffing at Millennium when it opens the first part of next year, 2020. So we're on our way. Here's 4-0 staffing. What we got with 4-0 staffing, and this goes to the, response times and the availability. We talked about the distribution, concentration, availability. This speaks directly to the availability. What we have seen is with 4-0 staffing, the time on task or the amount of time that's spent on the emergency has been reduced with four people. So we made some comparisons from 1 year to the next when we were staffed with three versus four, and we're finding out that at Station 1 on Engine 51, that unit on average is becoming available 1 minute and 1 second faster with four people than they did with three people. And in addition, at Station 2 on Engine 52, 2 minutes on average faster with four people. Station 5, almost 30 seconds. And here's the big one, Engine 57 at Station 7. For whatever reason, they are clearing the scene 2.5 minutes faster with four people than they did with three. So I've been asked many times, well, wait a minute, you're going to put four people on the engine. How is that going to make your wheels turn any faster to get there? And it doesn't make us turn our wheels any faster, but it makes us available with that resource so we're ready for the next call, and it prevents the unit from a further district to have to travel into service that call. So availability really helps. And what we saw in total for 6 months is 108 hours of increased availability. I can't think of a fire department, or a fire chief, a council that wouldn't want to be able to add 108 hours. I think I said minutes a couple seconds ago. 108 hours of response capability to their network. This is huge. So portal staffing really does make a difference. It does affect our response times. It really does get us there faster. It improves safety on the fire ground for our firefighters who are doing the work, and improves safety for our civilians. And not only that, if we're clearing the scene faster, sooner, then that means our patients who are having that emergency, they are spending less time at their own emergency. They're getting transported sooner with four people than they were with three. So once again here, this is the threshold where we want to assemble 14 firefighters, 10 minutes, 90%. What we were doing before with 3-0 staffed engines was 48%. Our goal is 90%. We've seen now over 6 months with 4-0 staffing, we're at 73%. So we're on our way. We know it's working. We're not at 90%, but we have made this improvement. So here's the squad. And I have one last slide after this. The squad is smaller, less expensive, staffed with two, lighter, more maneuverable, faster in many cases than in the engine or the truck. And it's staffed in the areas of the city I was talking about on the east, where we're at 63%. That's where we're putting it. It's strategic. So here's what we found. And we've shown this next slide to everybody. Community, the council, the COC. Hit it one more time. The blue are the areas, the stations on the west. The line at the top that goes across, that's the 90% mark. That's what we're shooting for. We want those columns to hit that red line. I hit it one more time, please. The red are the stations in the east. And you can see, clearly, we've talked about it. You know it well. That's where we have our deficiency. So here's where we've made our improvements with the squad, which speaks to the distribution of resources. Those circles, more circles means better distribution. So we have one more resource out there. And hit it once, please. So this is station 3. No change. But that's because the squad doesn't come as far west as station 3. But here's where we see some improvements. At station 4, from 75%, we're now at 81%. We're not at our threshold, but we know this is working. This is one squad. At station 6, from 71% to 79%. Here's the biggest improvement at station 7. We went from 54% to 85%. Huge difference. We're almost at our threshold at station 7. And then at station 8, from I think it's 56 or 58% to 77%. That's one squad, the first of four squads. I'm really pleased to see this, and I'm really happy with our staff. The squad that we implemented is not traditional. It's not a 24-hour unit. It's a 12-hour unit. It's not staffed with four. It's not an engine. It's completely different. It's even different than fire departments who are implementing squads. They're not doing this. They're not putting their squads in areas that are strategic for them, like we're doing in the east, where we're not making our times. They're housing them at a fire station. This squad is roaming, and it's chasing calls, and it's following units who are out of service or in training, and it's strategic. And the folks that we asked to work on this unit, they're doing exactly what we asked them to do, and the results are showing it. So I'm really proud of them, and I'm really happy with the results. And I hope that this speaks to some of the questions you might have had. What are we going to do? How can we make improvements? This is it right here. Distribution, concentration, and availability and reliability. That's it.
So this is one squad of four.
Yes.
So when you get, you're going to use the other three squads. When do those come online?
The second squad will come online in 2020, okay. Right around this time next year. Might be May. It might be May, but somewhere in the first part of 2020.
Oh, this is outstanding.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
What do they do, Chief? I don't even know if this is possible on downtime. I mean, if there's no calls and they're roaming, are they parked? Are they continuing? I'm just curious. I don't even know if they have any downtime. If there's ever a point where there's no activity.
Oh, there is. There is. So they're roaming. So they have a computer in the cab of the truck. This is a pickup truck. Mm-hmm. And they have a map, and they can see all the resources in the city. They can see what calls are ongoing, current. They can see what units are out of service because they might be at in-service training. They're out of service at in-service training. It doesn't make sense, but anyway, they might be at in-service training, and so they will gravitate to those areas, the areas where units aren't available or where they have vacated their districts, or they might be on a call. So Engine 54 might be on a call, so the squad will see it, and they'll just start making their way over. No hurry, but they'll just start going.
It sounds kind of similar to the beats that the police department has.
Yes.
So
that's right.
My compliments. This is awesome.
Thank you.
That is really, really great.
It's pretty great. Any other questions?
No.
Chief, I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
This was eye-opening. Now I think we all understand the numbers very well. We were missing that one piece, and now it completely makes sense.
So, Chief, only if you could share your success with staffing and hiring with the police department, I think it would be, because last time, that's one of the things they told us.
Right.
It's really, really challenging to find the talent, sounds like. But I think your strategy in different departments, I understand, but they were saying that everybody wants to work for the fire department, not for the police department. So.
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons why, I mean, I don't know about everybody, but certainly there's a good number of people who are interested in working for our city. And we have a great department, and people know, the word gets out real fast, that we're making improvements like this and doing the right thing and spending money wisely, and they want to come and work for a department that's doing this kind of thing. So, yeah, I appreciate that comment.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
To the annual report cover, and you may have noticed that the chair cover memo is missing at this time because it included some information about the fire that it's now been cleared up.
Right.
So we'll be working with Dwayne to finalize that cover memo. And then there were just some minor type of changes made in the document. And then when we get to page 8, under libraries, initially the recommendation had been to leave completely, but it was put back in because in the past we've always addressed the fact that there still is a shortage of square footage, and so this is basically the same recommendation that was in last year's report, that the city manager prioritize libraries right below public safety with the objective of increasing the amount of materials and staffing to meet the state average based on the most recent data available. And then number 2, that the city council direct the city manager to allocate a portion of any surplus from future budgets to supplement the library materials budget on a one-time basis. It's further recommended that the supplemental funds should be equal to the fees collected in any given year for processing passport applications. That we actually checked the budget, and it looks like there wasn't a surplus for this past year. So that's why we didn't call out specifically that it should come from, you know, the past budget. But if there is one in a future year, that
so you said there was a surplus that went to the library, or
there was not a surplus budget from the city's budget last year. So there was nothing available to actually, you know, plug into libraries. And then with recommendation number one, that addresses just the facilities and staffing. It doesn't talk about leasing, because we discussed last time that the money comes from the general fund, and it's kind of a catch-22. So,
and if I can just add, since I haven't participated much this year, I was off making a baby. I was a little busy, but you know, the negotiations are ongoing with Chestnut, and we are really hopeful that, I'm personally thinking that by this time next year, I'm going to have something real that I can share with you about what's happening with the library in Millennia. I think we're getting to that point where we're going to see some concrete action within the next year, if that's any comfort. But we are continuing to work on that.
Do you have any comments on the proposed changes?
So I remember some conversation around, I think we were told that although the funds are being generated from the passport processing, but however, those are deemed general funds, so they can't be earmarked or something. I remember somebody from the finance department saying that just within the city charter, it's just not possible.
Right, it just takes from another. I think
so. Does this language kind of sort of get around that?
This
we're saying
is
allocate as opposed to.
Yeah.
Is that consistent with what can and cannot be done?
Yeah.
Because I think what we were wishing was something that's just by city charter not possible. You can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the library operations are funded by the general
fund. By the general fund, so it has to.
So it's just kind of circular. So it's much better to say, hey, if somebody else, if you end up with a positive, we think that should be directed here. Right. And if you guys want to tie that to the passport fees, that's as good a thing as anything else. Hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be tied to that. I mean, it makes sense why you would want to, but you could also look at it and say, here's what we think is an appropriate level of annual spending on the collection materials, and that's what we would recommend you guys, just to start chipping away at kind of that deficit. So either of those would be reasonable recommendations for you to make.
I mean, this resource is equal to, so that's a good kind of a marker for us to use.
Yeah, I mean, I think this works. I think my big take was, you know, the passport was doing such a great job, number one in the nation. You know, they should get some bennies for that. You know, they really work hard in that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think this works. Anybody else have comments on that?
Pretty much good now, right?
Yeah. They're just saying it nice here.
Yeah. We're just asking.
Right. We're just asking nicer than not as forceful as we do. Okay,
so the next one is police, and on page 10, there's some changes. We added some verbiage to the second paragraph about recruiting, which says the police department is actively recruiting to fill the officer vacancies, and the GMOC encourages the city to explore non-traditional incentives for recruiting. One possible idea would be to provide temporary housing for officers with long commutes. We thought it would be more appropriate to put that in the discussion section rather than making it a formal recommendation, because that does limit them. And it's not really within the purview of the GMOC to get that specific, but to, you know, bring it up as a discussion item.
Okay.
So The first recommendation is the same, and then the second one addresses recruiting new officers. That was also in last year's report.
What about on a recommendation about, I mean, I know as far as them, would the police chief say when she was here, were they concentrating more on lateral transfers, or what was their priority in hiring? Because remember she said they were having a tough time finding talent. I mean, do they have a, were they prioritizing how they were doing their hiring?
I believe it was to, she mentioned the beats, to, was it to increase, I think it's actually, if you just double check here.
Because, I mean, I would like to see him go, you know, try to really go on a recruiting campaign to bring in experienced officers rather than trying to get new.
Well, I think
that's historically what they've prioritized,
yeah,
is the lateral
experience.
They don't send them to academy.
Yeah, because I mean, it's more efficient. I think it's cost effective. You got an experienced officer coming in that can go right out into the field. Well, I mean, they probably can have a training officer with them just to get used to, but I mean, they've already been through the academy.
Yeah, that's but historically,
I mean,
been there.
But can we still make that as a recommendation, even though they kind of, I mean, or I'm just.
I think from what I remember, they're doing that, but the problem was, is they were being stolen back.
It's the competition
and the
you
actions for employment.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. But maybe, but
right,
that
right.
was the other thing, though. Are we like expanding our scope on where we're like advertising? Because like, I see like, you know, you'll see like every once in a while like people or like sheriff department from Northern California advertising down here like Oakland, California.
Taking
sheriff
our people,
department.
Man, that's not cool.
I know exactly. We're having our own problems,
you
and they're
you
trying
the same
to steal.
Thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying. But you know, that was the one thing I wish I could ask the chief because I didn't when she was here. I didn't think of it. But I mean, are we doing that? Like, how far of a scope are we going out there and recruiting? I mean,
yeah.
I'm
not sure if that's within our purview to get that specific.
Yeah,
well, that's
yeah.
what I'm wondering.
What you're saying, yeah.
I mean, I think the problem they got is it goes into the overall package,
yeah.
hiring package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, if the pay is higher at another location than here, you know, it all goes
right.
back to the overall package.
I mean, because my question is, like, if we're having, you know, because she's told us we're having problems hiring people, so then if we're having problems hiring people, then we need to do something different.
Yeah.
That's,
but,
you know.
Well, and
I think
she
police
said,
departments in general are having issues with
yeah.
recruitment. This isn't
yeah.
a Chula Vista recruitment issue necessarily.
Yeah.
And historically, we've been really successful at stealing those experienced officers from, say, San Diego and other agencies.
Right.
We're
well,
really good
right.
at that. I think in general they're just having some recruitment issues with the police force, just
finding
nationally.
The right people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, because remember they got to do a drug
the
test, a background check.
There are a lot of people. Honestly, cops are getting a lot of bad press lately. Not everybody wants to be a cop right now.
Well, and they were saying that the political climate. Yeah, there's a lot of factors that go
yeah.
into it. But
so
but
recruitment
the,
is harder right now.
But the flip side of it is knowing all that. I think we need to have a very aggressive recruiting campaign.
Exactly.
To what you're saying
yeah,
is,
that's what I'm
given what
right.
we now know, that the
aggressive.
Circumstances, the climate is different.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think we went as far as say, look, you know, somebody just, you know, had a casual marijuana, you know, at one night, guess what? That's just,
right.
they're
yeah.
disqualified. I mean, you know,
yeah, yeah.
so what seems to be becoming kind of more norm. So given all that, I think what we're
that's
saying
that's
is, you know, we got to think outside the box and be
yeah.
a little more
yeah.
aggressive. So my suggestion would be, again, just a suggestion, a recommendation too, because I'm reading this as, you know, providing it with proper tools, technology, and resources. I mean, to me, that's just a standard language, but
right.
could we replace that with, I'm just going to say it, because an aggressive recruiting campaign or more effective?
Yeah,
I mean something like that has a little more
exploring the non-decision
and
we kind of say that that's in the paragraph.
Yeah, so I think
are we, okay, sorry,
the intent
I'm
was
not,
to have that explore non-traditional incentives for recruiting.
Okay,
kind of
yeah, I saw that. That's great. That was awesome. I like
so
that.
So I think
okay.
maybe we can take that language and add, you know, expand the campaign and explore non-traditional incentives.
Yeah,
there you go. Campaign.
But I mean, the word campaign implies we're not just going to sit and wait for the talent to come to us. Campaign meaning there's more of a kind of a proactive approach.
Right.
So I guess that's what we're trying to get across. Maybe.
We're recruiting in
you
various
moved up here.
We have to recruit. Yeah, it's just it's a different environment. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the questionnaire, the chief said that the department is invigorated by Measure A and has been actively recruiting for new officers. The department will be better will be able to better ascertain the impact of the increase in staffing levels once the new staff is fully trained and serving the community. New hire training is a year-long process and the benefits will take time to realize. However, the current strategy is to prioritize the hiring of patrol officers to help improve officers' per beat staffing and decrease response times.
All right, but that doesn't really give, that just kind of like the end result, but that doesn't really give like,
right,
the
doesn't
strategy
go into their
of hiring.
Recruiting.
Right.
Yeah.
Strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
And what I got from that presentation was I feel like they already feel like they're pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much if we. I mean, I think we're making a statement if we do add that and say, hey, we heard you say you think you're aggressive, but we want you to be more aggressive. So I mean, I don't know how much it'll affect that, but I think they already feel like they're pretty aggressive in what they're doing.
So comments? Do we want to add that statement?
I think we should.
I think we should.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because I think.
So can you read that again? The statement that you put in there. Max?
I was afraid you were going to ask
that. Well, essentially, I think for that recommendation, you'd like us to add some language about aggressive recruiting and
expanded
campaign.
Right.
Well, you could just say an expanded recruiting
exactly.
campaign.
Yeah.
If you want to be, you know, kind of soften it up a little bit. Yeah. But although I like the word aggressive, because
I
think that really speaks to the issue that, it, you know, we have to compete, so.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever you
think
appropriate.
Yeah, those are good words. Expanding the recruiting campaign.
Ready?
Okay.
Yep, do that. And that. The recommendations for priority one and priority two will be identical.
Okay.
And that is the gist of the changes.
Did we have anything in the fire for the percentage? Or that was all in the cover, right?
Yeah, that was all in the cover.
Okay.
So then what I'll do is send you a proposed draft, and then once we get sign off from you, then we'll include that in the report.
Okay.
Okay. So, any questions on any of those modifications? Anything else?
Questions, concern? Okay. Everybody looks happy.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. 3 minutes.
Oh, is that 3 minutes for this meeting?
Okay.
We're down to staff comments. Okay, so I received an email from Commissioner Alatorre prior to tonight's meeting, and he asked me to make copies of the year-to-date budget report as of February 28, 2019 for Measure A. And I expected him to be here tonight. So I did send him a text and I didn't get a response back. So hopefully he didn't get caught in the rain for something somewhere along the line. I'm not sure if I should distribute this without his explanations.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe once I talk to him, I can always email this to you guys.
Okay.
All right. So those are my only comments other than the joint workshop will be on May 2nd, 6 o'clock p.m. Yep, that's when we'll present the final report to the Planning Commission and the City Council. And then we'll have one meeting after that to go over questionnaires for next year's report. So other than that, any other staff have comments? No? Okay. All
Thank you, Jeff, for your great work.
Thanks.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And really, kudos to Scott.
Yeah, Scott, thank you.
He
for
did such a great job, you know, putting that stuff
together.
And it was a team effort. Tiffany and Lonnie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any commissioner comments?
So the next time we will meet would be May
2nd.
Yep.
And come on, Matt, I'm waiting for you. I'm putting the spot here.
I've said plenty.
Okay.
All right.
I guess that's it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.